This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Theater Conspiracy begins performances of George Brandt's one-woman show Grounded next Thursday at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers. The play tells the story of a U.S. Air Force pilot struggling to adjust to her new life after a pregnancy takes her from soaring in the skies to operating drones in a windowless trailer in the Las Vegas desert, all the while challenging our assumptions about war, family, and the power of storytelling. The show's star and its director join us in studio later this hour. We'll also explore how Southwest Florida's arts community is reacting after the Florida legislature's newly approved budget guts funding for cultural affairs and arts programming. But first, the 8th annual Fort Myers Film Festival kicks off next Wednesday and runs through March 25th. Over the years, the event has grown into an independent filmmaker's preferred event to create, unite, and show their work. In 2015, the festival was awarded the prestigious 2015 Chrysalis Award for Cultural Achievement by the Lee County Visitor and Convention Bureau and the Greater Fort Myers Chamber of Commerce. The five-day event includes film screenings, an opening night red carpet gala, and a celebratory awards ceremony, and it takes place at multiple venues here in Southwest Florida. The event attracts filmmakers from around the world, producing cinematic works in a broad spectrum of genres, from more abstract artistic short films to full-length documentaries. This year's festival kicks off with the Florida premiere of the rock documentary Melody Makers, about the world's first influential music publication by filmmaker Leslie Ann Coles. The festival will also showcase a new documentary about U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg ahead of its theatrical release in May. Joining me now in studio is the founder and director of the Fort Myers Film Festival, Eric Raddatz. Raddatz is also the presentation editor for the Florida Weekly. He's a regular contributor for NBC2 here in Fort Myers, just on this morning. He also founded the Naples International Film Festival and serves as the film curator for the Sydney and Burn Davis Art Center. And he's also founder, CEO, and president of ERAD Productions, LLC. Eric Raddatz, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, John. It's great to be. Always great to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic.
Joining us by phone from the UK is Barry Wenzel. He's featured in the festival's opening night documentary screening and served as chief contributing photographer for Melody Maker magazine from 1965 to 1975. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
This is Barry Wenzel. I actually am in Canada, the frozen north, not in England.
You're in Canada. My apologies.
I've just been listening to your weather forecast and went, sounds nice down there.
Yes, it is. I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we use the hashtag GCL. We're at WGCU. And Eric, as founding director of the festival, I wanted to start with you. And I've watched this event just continue to grow and grow over the years. And it seems like you really put Fort Myers on the map when it comes to attracting the attention of, you know, accomplished independent filmmakers all over the world. What sparked your interest in film to begin with and in continuing to make this labor of love that is the Fort Myers Film Festival keep happening?
Well, the spark, I'm sure, happened watching films as a kid. I mean, the what we all tend to enjoy is films, and that's something that unites us, really. And so we have fond recollections of films growing up. Getting into the realms of visual journalism and photography and filmmaking turned me into wanting to make my own films, of which I've made a few. And then actually, you know, visiting other film festivals allowed me to say, you know, Fort Myers and Naples really needed something like this. So starting the Naples Film Festival and now the Fort Myers Film Festival in our eighth year, the spark just came from the fact that we enjoy films. And when it comes to film festivals, playing independent films, films that really have great relevance and usually are fueled by sincere passions and causes and really help us to understand things that we may not have ever thought of before. There's a lot of reasons, but overall, we do hear from filmmakers now over the world who come into Fort Myers that we like Fort Myers Film Festival. And that's really fun for me to hear, and I think it says a lot about the work that's gone into building the Fort Myers Film Festival. It's a lot to our venues that have been involved, a lot to our volunteers, a lot to our programming team and our advisory board, and a lot to our city, where people can now, I feel very proud to say, we have a film festival here. We don't have to travel to some of the bigger film festivals. We have the program that's on par with the best festivals in the world right here in Southwest Florida. I don't know if that answers your question, John Davis, but I sure tried.
I mean, the schedule is so ambitious. Do you know off the top of your head roughly how many films are going to be screened?
We have about 80 films. We're in 7 locations. We have probably 20 to 30 filmmakers joining and probably half a dozen to a dozen local filmmakers who are involved this year.
What can you tell us about the spectrum of genres that are going to be represented here in filmmaking?
Well, we have several categories. So not to bore you with the categories, but feature and documentary, short film, and short film, strictly local, are really our categories. But we'll have we have a lot of great documentaries. We have a lot of great short films. If you look at the schedule online and or pick up a guide at one of our venues across Southwest Florida, and you're not sure exactly what film really strikes your fancy, I would say pick out a block of short films, because these short films are really highly – we get a lot of film submissions. We look very closely at the short films. And so if you're not sure – what I used to do when I first started going to like Edinburgh Film Festival, Tribeca, Sundance, I just went to the short films because I wasn't sure which I would like. But in the short films, you get more bang for your buck, really. You get usually between 3 to 6 independent short films from all over the world, and they're really, really masterfully done. So, we have striking films that you'll be talking about. You saw here first at the Fort Myers Film Festival.
And speaking of talking about the films, aside from screening them, I mean, is it important to you to make sure that this festival, you know, fosters a space for people to be able to reflect and talk about what they've seen?
Absolutely. And in fact, starting the conversation is often what art and the art of film does best. We see a film. We see some subject matter that we may see differently, and then we have a Q&A afterwards. We have a panel at the Sydney and Burn Davis Arts Center Sunday the 25th, for example, at 3:30, where many of the filmmakers who are there will be participating in an open discussion. And often what we see taking place for the film festival is people are talking afterwards, they're getting together afterwards, and subject matter can be controversial. Sometimes we ruffle the feathers a little bit. We take into consideration edgier films that might be controversial even. And we think it's good because oftentimes we might have been exposed to an understanding different points of view. And we hope that this fosters a sense of, you know, unity and tolerance and diversity. And we know that a lot of these films, you do walk out saying, hey, I didn't really think of it that way, or never knew that. And we do hope that it makes overall our community, I hate to say more intelligent, but certainly more aware and more keen and understanding and more you don't have to change your point of view. Just because we're playing a film doesn't mean we agree with that point of view, but we do need to understand other people's points of view. So the discussion is very important for us.
And the opening night red carpet gala at the Barbara B. Mann Performing Arts Hall is going to kick off the festival, including a screening and the Florida premiere of Leslie Ann Cole's rock documentary Melody Makers, which right now is sweeping awards at other film festivals. And Barry Winsell, who's featured in the film and a great deal of the story is told from his point of view, joins us as well. Barry, you were chief photographer for Melody Maker magazine in the 60s and 70s. Can you take us back to that time? And what that job initially meant for you and your career and some of the stuff you got to do.
Well, yes. How did I get the job? It was purely being in the right place at the right time, I guess, and the right sort of vibe, because there weren't many photographers around at that age and at that time in the early 60s. I started around 1963 working in a photo studio. And the old tradition of the alchemy of mixing chemicals and all of that and the magia. So I grew up and learned how to do that. Finally got a job with some photojournalist printing his stuff. And he had a lot of extra passes to various theaters and gigs, and that, including the BBC. So he said, hey, when you're not working for me, go out and do your own thing. And I did and went into theaters and saw bands. And I was at the BBC TV studios and photographing Count Basie, I think, in doing some jazz stuff because I was dead interested in music and that. And then I went to the BBC bar where everybody goes, and there were the Supremes and Dinah Ross talking to a journalist. And I sat down and asked if I could take a few snaps very nervously. And she said, "Oh, yes, of course. No, please do." Because at that time, there was no wall or you could just meet people like account, you know, "Hey man, I really dig you." "Oh man, yeah, great, great, great. And how's Max?" Max Jones was the melody maker, a jazz writer who knew Billie Holiday and all these characters personally. And the journalist interviewing Dinah Ross said, "Hey man, why don't you pop in a few pictures of the old melody maker? We could always use a snap or two." And so the next week I did, and when it was published, I had a picture on the front page with a credit, and I got paid about $2, I think. And I went, "Wow, fantastic!" Got a phone call the next week from the assistant editor saying, "Hey, we'll offer you a job, freelance photographer. He was a Scotsman. I couldn't understand a word he said, but I went, "Okay." So I just somehow started, like, from one picture, having a job on the oldest newspaper of music on the planet, which was the Melody Maker, which started around 1926 as a professional musical paper. And by this time in the early 60s, the Beatles were in it, and a lot of the people didn't like that. But I joined at a point where things were really happening in 64, 65, and then I stayed till 75 and had to leave because the longest cocktail party was getting too much. But in that meantime, I met so many people and photographed, but I had the freedom to do that. There weren't many, or I think it was only two or three photographers when I started doing music, but there was no anybody doing music photography for a paper which actually was printing. I guess it was the Facebook of the day. We went out and discovered bands ourselves and put them in the paper and wrote about them. So there was a lot of freedom. It was like being on a football team or something. It was a team. We all worked together, and we all went out and, it was amazing to spend the whole afternoon with John Lennon or Eric Clapton or Jimi Hendrix just chatting or meeting them in pubs or seeing them at gigs. It was a bit of a family affair, really. We were all starting off. I was learning how to take pictures. They were learning how to play their instruments. Interesting time.
Wow, I'm turning green with envy about these experiences you've had.
Me too, looking back. Because I haven't looked back on all that stuff for so long. Until about 15 years ago, people were pestering me because I went off and did many other things like Monty Python. And coming back to it and looking at the pictures again, when Leslie Ann said, "Here, I want to do a little cameo." So she started doing a 20-minute interview, and I went, "Hey, hold on, it's not just about me, it's about a lot more, and you've got to go and meet some of these old characters before they pass away. Get it from the horse's mouth, you know, like a real documentary, because so much is from hearsay and people who weren't there or people who are totally out of it. No, we wanted to tell the truth, because the truth is far more amazing than fantasy." And I think that's how the documentary sort of eventually evolved out of, "Yeah, you could have gone and see Jeff Dexter." Or, "Hey, you know, some of the Melody Maker journalists are still around and hear their point of view," which I think comes out in the documentary. It's, low budget, but we had to do it. It was like, right, tell the truth. That's the art of the documentary, as Eric was saying about. It's the only form of information that's non-commercial and that, and everybody's got their viewpoint. And we were lucky to work at a time where that was paramount, you know, integrity. And we didn't tell stories about various characters off stage, and you know, you wouldn't like that. There was a sort of honor, and it was fun, you know, it was.
and Barry, on that subject, you know, the magazine's rise and fall really marked the end of a style of rock and roll journalism that, it's said lamentably, really doesn't exist today. Do you find that to be true? And from your perspective, what was Melody Maker magazine doing differently?
Well, I think what it did was, when I joined, it was rejigged. It was it was a sort of pretty boring paper for professional for musicians, you know, like the whole back pages are full of adverts for, you know, tuba player, this and that. And that eventually was kept because that's how a lot of bands formed. You know, a couple of members of Genesis and various other people read the small ads, and it was a sort of what it started as, but it became bigger. And then when Ray Coleman took over, he used pictures full page because he realized the power of the image. You know, when I went to see a photograph of David Bowie concert, he put a picture on the front page, you know, big with that, and make it like really sensational. And then the article inside would have pictures and the story of the gig or whatever we were doing. So it was like a Facebook of "you are here" a week later for people who weren't able to be there. That I thought was my my sort of role, really, to, because it never been done before. And all the other magazines had used stock pictures or setups or, you know, really bad stuff. But we had the opportunity, as the Melody Maker was regarded by musicians as the Bible, because it told the truth, to sort of go to interview and spend a whole day with people and just photograph what was there. It was very photojournalistic. I try not to set up too much stuff, but to be a fly on the wall, a bit like Don Pennybecker, and you know, chip in a few conversations and that. But it was pretty simple. You know, I don't know how I did it.
So yeah, kind of like the writing itself.
Just like a conversation, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah, like you talk about, you know, waiting for real moments to capture as opposed to staging them. It kind of reflects what the writers were doing.
Exactly, yeah, or how the bands were. You know, at gigs you wouldn't, I didn't bother with the first number or two, things were coming together, but you just know somehow that, oh, there'd be a time, like Cartier-Bresson, the photographer, said, where things had come together and you just go click and you got it. I don't know how that happened. It was a zen and the art of letting go, or just you know, learning to click the shutter when there's lots of pictures go before and that. And conversations with Clapton and Hendrix about that were like, hey man, how did you play that? It seemed like the guitar was playing you, or you were playing the guitar. Oh, well, you know, and Jimmy would say, well, sometimes you get into that zone and you're just there and you just have to be there, and it's all almost automatic, but you're connected. And that was a thrill of the music, and it still is. I mean, all of that music from 50 years ago is now classical music of the 20th century. Who would have thought? We thought it was just a passing show, and but it was important. You know, we didn't know what we were doing, but we're having a lot of fun doing it, and it was a joy of expression, I guess. You know, these normal four louts from Liverpool, you know, what would they be doing if without music? Probably be a load of thugs. But give them the guitar or a beat and that, and it's like, wow, you've got that, you know. That is the art of music, and art and culture is very important. You know, give them a guitar, not a gun.
Well, if you're just joining our show, you've been hearing the voice of Barry Wintzell. He was chief photographer for Melody Maker magazine from 1965 to 1975. And there's a documentary that will be featured the opening night of the Fort Myers Film Festival, largely told from Barry's point of view. We're also joined right now by Eric Raddatz in studio. He's the founding director of the Fort Myers Film Festival. And listeners can call in and join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And Eric, another documentary I'm excited about is the Julie Cohen and Betsy West documentary, RBG, about, of course, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's going to be screened Saturday, March 24th at 1 o'clock. What can you tell us about this documentary?
Well, I can tell you that it is something you're not going to want to miss. It's a film that is only played at a couple of places like Sundance, and it's going to have a national theatrical rollout in May. So if you're excited about a good documentary about Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you're going to catch it nearly 2 months before anyone else in the world is going to catch it. And we're happy to start to develop this kind of reputation at the Fort Myers Film Festival, where we're playing films that you're going to see on Netflix in a couple of years. So there's things that you wouldn't know about her growing up, and how she got to where she is at. And I think there's a, you know, there's a movement, and it's interesting to see those who are getting behind what they're calling the notorious RBG. Mm-hmm. And she addresses it. She addresses kind of the Amy Poehlerson imitation of her on Saturday Night Live. We get to see her see it, for example, for the first time and react to it, and then offer some very sage wisdom regarding where she feels we're at with regards to, you know, the importance of her position and the importance of the Constitution, and some very deep thoughts from her that she opens up about that you're just not going to see anywhere else.
I understand you were among the press pool of folks at Sundance who got to speak with Justice Ginsburg.
Yeah, I wanted to see the film, and it was at the Mark and Sundance in Park City. And sure enough, after the film, it was a very secure environment. But she came down, and I got to ask her a question about my question to her, to the Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, was, what's left on your bucket list? What do you still want to accomplish? And she got very serious and thoughtful and very contemplative, and gave a very insightful remark, and I sense that that's the type of person she is, and it kind of gave me goosebumps and maybe even a tear, and I remember thinking while I was there, you know, I really would love to play this at the Fort Myers Film Festival, and I know a lot of people here in Fort Myers, Southwest Florida, are going to want to see this film. It's playing Saturday, March 24th at the AMC Theater in North Fort Myers, 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock, two screenings, and I get a sense that it's going to be packed. So definitely come out to see it, and along with a lot of other films that are playing, this is your chance to see a film that you may never get a chance to see again. Some of these go into this. That one in particular is a Magnolia Films and a CNN film, so you will see that months from now. But some of these other ones are still on the independent film circuit. So that I just want to mention a lot of these films, these 80 films, pick up a guide, kind of figure out which one you want to see, because a lot of times I get asked after the film festival, somebody say, hey, where can I see that film? Because they're so used to the accessibility of Netflix and of YouTube and Vimeo. And the answer is you can't see it anywhere else, guys. This is your only chance to see it. And that's what makes it a real special occasion. No, man, you can't just go download that. You can't just go see it on YouTube. These are very thoughtful, very, very important. In films, and while some you may get to see later, these are fresh, not in distribution. Not you can't get the library, guys. And I think in Southwest Florida, the attitude kind of a little bit was, we think this is just your playing films. We can just watch at home. No, these aren't. These are ones you can only see at the film festival, and it's a good thing because you get to actually get out of the house. You know, I mean, it's fun for Netflix on the couch sometimes, but sometimes you need to get out and meet other people who are excited about similar films that you are.
Excellent. And we have just a couple minutes left here, but I was hoping you could maybe give us some insight into how you select what's going to be featured among all the submissions that I know come into you all year long.
Well, it's tough because we have a team and there's a process. And I try to watch just about every film. This year we had over 400, which is a lot. But I am a little bit like that guy who prefers watching independent films over bigger films. So I watch a lot of them and I have my say. And we have a team, a new program director and a programming team. And, you know, it's important for us to find, it's got to be a good film. And it's got to, we hope, have some heart and be passionate about a cause that we feel like others would want to go watch in a theater. Mm-hmm. And also offer some sort of fine touch on how it will be understood in the community. We have screenings at TGIM in consideration. We let people from the audience, public, kind of gauge, because we want all points of view as to how does this, you know, resonate with the film community. And so it's kind of an intricate process, but it's not impossible to get through. And it's a fun process for us. But in the end, we feel very strong about our programming.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being here with us, Eric Raddatz, founder and director of the Fort Myers Film Festival, which again kicks off next Wednesday and runs through March 25th. You can get more information, find a schedule, purchase tickets at fortmyersfilmfestival.com. Eric, thanks so much for dropping by the studio.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, John.
Also, thanks so much to Barry Wenzel, who's been with us as well. He was chief photographer for Melody Maker magazine from 1965 to 1975 and is largely featured in a film that is going to kick off the opening night of the festival next Wednesday. Barry, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Well, thanks to you, John, and to Eric. I wish I could see the Ginsberg documentary. You have a lot of great stuff going on there. Keep the faith and carry on rocking in the free world.
All right, thank you. We're taking a short break, but when we return, a star and director of the Theater Conspiracy's upcoming production of the one-woman show Grounded joins us in studio, and we'll hear from a leader of Southwest Florida's nonprofit arts community about how they're coping with deep cuts to arts and cultural affairs programming made by lawmakers in Florida's newly approved state budget. I'm John Davis, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.
Woman and his best friend in bed and having fun. Oh, it's falling down the corridor.